Chapter 2. Shortly before its public immolation in a fire pit located just outside the prison gates, a silver protocol droid that had belonged briefly to Major Kraken had put the odds of escaping from Selvaris at roughly 1,000,000 to 1. But the droid hadn't known about the Rin Syndicate or about what the clandestine group had set in motion on the planet, even before the first chunks of Yorick coral had been sown. Kraken, Page, and the others knew something else as well, that hope flourished in the darkest of places, and that while the Yuuzhan Vong could imprison or kill them, there wasn't a soldier in the camp who wouldn't have risked his or her life to see even one of their number survive to fight another day. First sunrise was an hour away, and Kraken, Page, the three Bith, and the Jennet were crouched at the entrance to a tunnel the prisoners had excavated with hands, claws, and whatever tools they had been able to fabricate or steal during the excavation of the fire pit, in which several dozen droids had been ritually slagged by the camp's resident priests. Every prisoner in the hut was awake, and many hadn't slept a wink all night. They watched silently from the flattened fronds and grasses that were their beds, wishing they could voice a personal good luck to the four who were about to embark on what seemed a hopeless enterprise. Lookouts had been posted at the doorway. The light was gauzy, and the air was blessedly cool. Outside the hut, the chitterings and stridulations of jungle life were reaching a fevered crescendo.
"You want to go over any of it?" Kraken asked in a whisper.
"No, sir," the four answered in unison. Kraken nodded soberly.
"Then may the Force be with all of you," Page said for everyone in the hut.
The cramped entrance to the tunnel was concealed by Kraken's own bed of insect-ridden palm fronds. Below a removable grate, the half-hewn shaft fell into utter darkness. The secret passageway had been started by the first captives to be imprisoned on Selvaris, and had been enlarged and lengthened over the long months by successive groups of new arrivals. Progress had often been measured in centimeters, as when the diggers had struck a mass of Yorick coral that had taken root in the sandy soil. But now the tunnel extended beneath the prison wall and the senilac grasses beyond to just inside the distant tree line. His facial fur blackened with charcoal, the gaunt Jennet was the first to worm his way into the hole. When the three Bith had bellied in behind him, the entrance was closed and covered over. What little light there had been disappeared. The nominal leader of the would-be escapees, the Jennet, had been captured on Bilbringi during a raid on an enemy installation. His fellow captives knew him as Thorsh, although on his home world of Garbin, a list of his accomplishments and transgressions would have been affixed to the name. Reconnaissance was his specialty, so he was no stranger to darkness or tight spots, having infiltrated many a Yuuzhan Vong Warren and Grashal on Duro, Gindine, and other worlds. The Selvaris tunnel felt comfortably familiar. The Bith had it harder because of their size, but they were a well-coordinated species, with memory and olfactory abilities that rivaled Thorsh's own. Indeterminate minutes of muted crawling brought them to the first of a series of confined right-angle turns, where the tunnelers had been forced to detour around an amorphous mass of Yorick coral. To Thorsh, the detour meant that the team was directly under the prison wall itself. Now it was just a matter of negotiating the long stretch beneath the senilacs the Yuuzhan Vong had cultivated outside the perimeter. Thorsh knew better than to relax, but his continued vigilance hardly mattered. In the space of a local week, senilac roots had penetrated the roof of the poorly braced tunnel, and the convoluted roots were every bit as barbed as the strands released by the knee-high stalks themselves. For meters at a stretch, there was simply no avoiding them. The barbs shredded the thin garments the four had been wearing when captured and left deep bleeding furrows in the flesh of their backs. Thorsh muttered a curse at each encounter, but the Bith, ever careful about displaying emotion, endured the pain in silence.
The brutal crawl ended where the tunnel sloped upward at the far edge of the Senelac field. Shortly, the team emerged inside the buttressed base of an enormous hardwood.
The thick-trunked tree bore a striking resemblance to the gnarl trees native to Dagobah, but was in fact a different species altogether. 100 meters away, the prison wall glowed softly green with bioluminescence. Two sleepy guards occupied the closest watchtower, their amphistaffs stiff as spears, and a third could be glimpsed in the adjacent tower. Those warriors who weren't elsewhere within the walls of the compound were attending prayer services at the temple. The bold incantations of the latter wafted through the jungle, counterpoint to the riotous calls of birds and insects. Strands of mist meandered through the treetops like apparitions. One of the Bith elbowed his way alongside Thorsh and aimed his slender forefinger to the west.
There.
Thorsh sniffed repeatedly and nodded.
There.
Deeper into the trees, ankle-high mud gave way to swamp, and it wasn't long before the four were wading waist-deep through black water. They made scarcely half a kilometer before an alarm sounded. Neither the howling of a siren nor the raucous bleating of a starship's klaxon, the alarm took the form of a prolonged and intensifying drone that arrived from all directions.
"Sentinel beetles," one of the Bith said in a grating voice.
Small creatures that resembled turfhoppers, sentinels reacted to intruders or danger with rapid beating of their serrated wings. The species was not native to Salvaris, or indeed to any other world in the galaxy. Thorsh's clawed feet dug into the thick organic muck, and he quickened his pace, waving for the Bith to follow him.
"Hurry!"
The need for caution was behind them. They flailed through the dark scum-covered water, stumbling forward, slamming into stilt roots, their uniforms snagging on quilled branches and sinuous, coarse-barked lianas. The droning of the sentinel beetles modulated to a deafening buzz, and the harnessed beams of lambent crystal illuminators played and crisscrossed overhead. From the direction of the prison came the ferocious barking of Bisseps, the Yuuzhan Vong lizard hounds, and something had taken to the air, a coral skipper gunship, or one of the seabird-like flyers known as a Sikvai. A loud whining split the sky, and the four escapees submerged themselves in the filmy water to avoid detection. Thorsh surfaced a long moment later, dripping water and gasping for air. The baying of the Bisseps was louder, and now the sound of nimble footfalls and angry voices cut through the humid air. The temple was emptying. Search parties were being organized. Thorsh stood to his full height, spurring everyone into motion once more. They slipped and slid and otherwise fought their way through dense vegetation to the eastern bank of the wide estuary. By then, Selvaris's primary was cresting the horizon. Long horizontal rays of rose-tinted sunlight streaked through the trees, saturating the evanescing mist with color. Making haste for the water, one of the Bith sank to his waist in the liquid sand. It took the combined strength of all three of his teammates to yank him free, and more time than they had to spare. The coral skipper reappeared, rocketing out over the estuary and loosing molten projectiles into the jungle. Fireballs mushroomed above the treetops, sending thousands of nesting creatures into frantic flight.
"Captain Page never promised this was going to be easy," Thorsh said.
"Or dry," the quicksand-covered Bith added. Thorsh's long nose twitched, and his keen eyes scanned the opposite shoreline.
"We're not far now."
He indicated a bird island in the middle of the estuary.
"There."
They plunged into the brackish water and began to swim for their lives. The morning sky was black with frightened birds. The coral skipper made another pass, forging through the airborne chaos. Bird bodies plummeted, slapping the surface of the calm water and tinting it red. Thorsh and the others scrambled onto the island's narrow beach. They picked themselves up and sprinted for cover, squirming into the island's snarl of skeletal trees and thorny bushes. They stopped frequently to get their bearings. The Bith's olfactory organs were located in the parallel skin folds of their cheeks.
but it was Thorsh's long nose that directed them straight to what the Wrynn had hidden months earlier. Two aged swoops, camouflaged by a mimetic tarpaulin. The repulsor lift swoop bikes were more engine than chassis, with sloping front ends and high hand grips. These two lacked safety harnesses, and their fairings were incomplete. Both were built for single pilots, but the saddle-like seats were long enough to accommodate passengers, assuming one was crazy enough to climb aboard, or assuming that one had a choice. Thorsh straddled the rustier of the pair and began to throw priming and ignition switches. Reluctantly, the swoop's engine shuddered to life, idling erratically at first but gradually smoothing out. "We're juiced," he said. One of the Bith perched behind Thorsh on the long seat. The shorter of his two comrades was appraising the saddle of the other swoop. "Coordinates for the extraction point should be loaded in the navicomputer," Thorsh said, shouting to be heard above the throb of the repulsor lift engines. "Coming up on the display now," the Bith pilot said. Clearly, the third Bith had grave misgivings about mounting the swoop, but his doubts disappeared when the coral skipper grazed the treetops, searching for signs of the escapees. Thorsh waited for the wedge-shaped assault craft to pass before saying, "We're better off splitting up. We'll rendezvous at the rally point." "Last one there," his passenger started to say, only to let his words trail off. The Bith pilot revved the swoop's engine. "Let's hope for a tie." "The game is effectively over," C-3PO told Han Solo. "I suggest that you surrender the rest of your players now, rather than risk further humiliation." "Surrender?" Han jerked his thumb at the golden protocol droid. "Who's he think he's talking to?" Leia Organa Solo raised her brown eyes from the game table to glance at her husband. "I have to admit, things do look pretty bad." C-3PO agreed. "I'm afraid you can't win, Captain Solo." Han scratched his head absently and continued to study the playing field. "That's not the first time someone's told me that." The three of them were seated at the circular Dejeric table in the forward hold of Millennium Falcon. The table was in fact a hologram projector with a checkered surface etched in concentric circles of green and gold. At the moment, it was displaying six holomonster pieces, some legendary, some modeled after actual creatures, with names that sounded more like sneezes than words. Squatting on the grated portion of the compartment deck sat Cockmame and Meewal, Leia's Nogri protectors. Agile bipeds with hairless gray skin and pronounced cranial ridges, they were unnervingly predatory in appearance, but their loyalty to Leia knew no bounds. In the long war against the Yuuzhan Vong, several Nogri had already given their lives to safeguard the woman they still sometimes referred to as Lady Vader. "Don't tell me that you are actually contemplating a move," C-3PO said. Han looked at him askance. "What do I look like I'm doing? Stargazing?" "But Captain Solo, quit rushing me, I tell you." "Really, 3PO?" Leia intervened in false sincerity. "You have to give him time to think." "But Princess Leia, the game timer is nearing the end of its cycle." Leia shrugged. "You know how he is." "Yes, Princess, I know how he is." Han glared at the two of them. "What is this, some kind of tag team match?" C-3PO started. "Certainly not, I'm merely—" "Remember," Han said, thrusting his finger out, "it's not over till the hut squeals." C-3PO looked to Leia for explanation. "The hut squeals?" Han cupped his scarred chin in his hand and took in the board. Early on, he had lost a broad-shouldered Kintan strider to C-3PO's venomous corrugated chlor slug, then a pincer-handed Nagak to the droid's lance-wielding Sakoran monarch. Han's quadrant of the board still showed a hunchbacked, knuckle-dragging, green-hided Mantellian Savrip and a bulbous-bodied Guk. But his alloy opponent had not only a claw-handed, trumpet-snouted Grimtash and a four-legged, sharp-toothed Haujix, but also two rainbow-skinned Alderaanian Molotars waiting in the wings. Unless Han could do something to prevent it, C-3PO was going to send the Grim Tash to the board's center space and win the game. Then it hit him. A sinister laugh escaped his closed lips and his eyes sparkled. Leia regarded him for a moment.
Uh-oh, 3PO. I don't like the sound of that laugh.
Han shot her a look. Since when?
I understand completely, Princess, C-3PO said on alert. But really, I don't see that there's anything he can do at this point.
Han's fingers activated a series of control buttons built into the rim of the table. With Leia and C-3PO gazing intently at the board, the hulking Mantellian Savrip sidestepped to the left, took hold of the Guk, Han's other remaining piece, and held the suddenly screeching creature high overhead. C-3PO might have blinked if he had eyes in place of photoreceptors.
But you've attacked your own piece.
He turned to Han. Captain Solo, if this is some kind of trick to distract me, or some attempt to instill compassion? Save your compassion for someone who needs it, Han cut in. Like it or not, that's my move. C-3PO watched the squealing, seemingly betrayed Guk struggle in the Savrip's vice-like grip.
Most infuriating creature, he said. Still, a victory is a victory.
The droid lowered his hands to the control panel and commanded the Grim Tash to advance to the center. But no sooner did the snouted creature take a step than Han's Savrip tightened his hold on the Guk, squeezing the hapless thing so hard that hollow drops of the Guk's much-prized skin oil began to drip onto the playing field, creating a virtual puddle. Tasked, C-3PO's Grim Tash continued to move forward, only to slip on the Guk's skin oil and fall hard onto its back, cracking its triangular-shaped head on the checkered board and de-resolving. Ha! Han said, clapping his hands once, then rubbing them together in anticipation. Now who's losing?
Oh, 3PO, Leia said sympathetically, hiding a smile behind her hand.
C-3PO's photoreceptors were riveted to the board, but disbelief was evident in his response.
What? What? Is that permitted?
He looked up from the table.
Princess Leia, that move can't possibly be legal.
Han leaned forward, his eyebrows beetled. Show me where the rules say different.
C-3PO stammered. Bending the rules is one thing, but this is a flagrant violation not only of the rules, but also of proper game etiquette. At the very least, you have performed a suspect move, and very likely a rogue one.
Good choice of words, 3PO, Leia said. Han leaned away from the table, interlocking his hands behind his head and whistling a taunting melody.
I suggest we allow Princess Leia to be the final judge, C-3PO said.
Han made a sour face. Ah, you're just a sore loser.
A sore loser? Why, I never...
Admit it, and I'll go easy on you for the rest of the game. C-3PO summoned as much indignation as his protocol programming allowed.
You have my assurance that I've no need to emerge victorious from each engagement, whereas you, on the other hand...
Han laughed sharply, startling the droid to silence. 3PO, if I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times. You always have to be ready for surprises.
Pompous man, C-3PO said.
When Cockmame and Meewal added their gravelly comments and guttural laughs to the merriment, he threw up his hands in a gesture of defeat.
Oh, what's the use?
Abruptly, a warning tone sounded from the engineering station across the hold. The Nogri shot to their feet, but Leia propelled herself from the Dejeric table's arc of padded bench and beat both of them to the communications display. Han watched expectantly from the game board. A surprise? He asked when Leia turned from the displays.
She shook her head. The signal we've been waiting for.
Han rushed from the table and followed Leia into the starboard ring corridor, where he nearly tripped over a pair of knee-high boots he had left on the step. Early in his career as a smuggler, the Falcon had been the only home he knew, and now, this past year especially,
it had become the only home Han and Leia knew. Whether in their living quarters or in the forward hold, personal items were strewn about, waiting to be picked up and put away. The mess was just that, in desperate need of cleaning, maybe even fumigating. And indeed, the dented and bruised exterior of the old freighter, with its mishmash of primers and fuse-welded borrowed parts, was beginning to resemble that of a house, well-loved and lived in, but too long neglected. Han slid to a halt, just short of the connector that accessed the cockpit, and swung to the Nogri. "Cockmame, get to the dorsal gun turret, and this time remember to lead your targets, even though I know it goes against your grain. Meanwhile, I'm going to need you here to help our packages get safely aboard." In the outrigger cockpit, with its claustrophobic surround of blinking instruments, Leia was already cinched into the co-pilot's chair, both hands busy activating the Falcon startup systems and console displays. Han slid into the pilot's seat, strapping in with one hand and throwing overhead toggles with the other. "Can we locate them yet?" "They're on the move," Leia said, "but I've got a fix on them." Han leaned over to study one of the display screens. "Lock their coordinates into the tracking computer, and let's get the topographic sensors online." Leia swiveled to the comm board, her hands moving rapidly over the controls. "Take her up," she said a moment later. Awakened from what amounted to a nap, the YT-1300's engines powered up. Han clamped his hands on the control yoke and lifted the ship out of its hiding place, an impact crater on the dark side of Selvarus's puny moon. He fed power to the sublight drives and steered a course around the misshapen orb. Green, blue, and white Selvarus filled the wraparound viewport. Han watched Leia out of the corner of his eye. "Hope you remembered to look both ways." Leia shut her eyes briefly. "We're safe." Han smiled to himself. The Yuuzhan Vong couldn't be sensed through the Force, but Leia had never had any problem sensing trouble. "I just don't want to be accused of making any more illegal moves." She looked at him. "Only daring ones." Han continued to watch her secretly. Through all the rough-and-tumble years, her face had not lost its noble beauty. Her skin was as flawless now as it had been when Han had first set eyes on her, in a detention cell of all places. Her long hair retained its sheen, her eyes their deep inviting warmth. Han and Leia had experienced some troubled months following Chewbacca's death, but she had waited him out, and wherever they traveled now, no matter how much danger they put themselves in, mostly at Han's instigation, they were completely at home with each other. To Han, each and every action felt right. He had no yearning to be anywhere but where he was, with his beloved partner. It was a sappy thought, he told himself, but undeniably true. As if reading his thoughts, Leia turned slightly in his direction, lifting her chin a bit to show him a dubious look. "You're in a good mood for someone setting out on a dangerous rescue mission." Han made light of the moment. "Beating 3PO at Djarik has made a new man of me." Leia tilted her head. "Not too new, I hope." She placed one hand atop his on the yoke, and with the other traced the raised scar on his chin. "It's taken me 30 years to get used to the old you." "Me too," he said, without humor. Exhaust ports ablaze, the Falcon rolled through a sweeping turn and raced for Selvarus's binary-brightened transitor.